Support by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This verse is quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.30.39. When the Rasa dance was going on in full swing, Krishna left all the gopis and took only Srimati Radharani with him. At that time, all the gopis lamented, and Srimati Radharani, being proud of her position, requested Krishna to carry her wherever he liked. Then Krishna immediately disappeared from the scene, and Srimati Radharani began to lament. Om Gayanti Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Melitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So we didn't read the first part, how we came onto this particular section, so I'll read the verse before we started. Love for Krishna has his love for Krishna has this one unique effect. It is imbued with it imbues superiors, equals and inferiors with a spirit of service to the Lord, to Lord Krishna. So he's talking about three relationships here, the relationships of the gopis, the relationships of the cowherd boys, and the relationships of Krishna's mother and father. And these are seen as being on a higher platform than Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha there's awe and reverence, and in Goloka Vrindavan, Gokul Vrindavan, there's intimacy. And so what the question is being asked is, how is it that these servitors of the Lord on this intimate platform friend, parent and conjugal lover, that they're seeing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in awe and reverence? It doesn't make sense. But I was thinking about material, even in material life, when we really love somebody, or in the material it's called lust, we're wanting something in return, but still there's affection there. If we're really attracted to somebody, then we actually internally worship that person. Is that right? And also, we see in relationships where the spouse is they were very attracted, then we can see externally they sometimes worship that person. They're like a menial servant. So it's not a dichotomy. It's actually a natural consequence of a loving relationship. And so Krishna uses this attraction to increase a devotee's devotion. It says here, I'll read the verse from about the coward men, Nanda Maharaj. Although no one is more respectable elder for Krishna than Nanda Maharaj in Vraj, who in transcendental paternal love has no knowledge that his son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still ecstatic love makes him, what to speak of others, feel himself to be a servant of Lord Krishna. I mean, when we think about it, even what to speak of devotees, even Lord Krishna sees himself as a servant. It's the nature of the soul. In Bhagavad Gita it says that Prabhupada gives the instruction that everybody's having to serve, especially the jiva. Krishna is Swarat. He's completely different. He doesn't have to serve. But still, his nature is to serve. So what to speak of the jiva? The jivas, A serves B, Prabhupada says, B serves A, the artisan serves this person, we serve the parents. Everybody's performing service. So how can we give that propensity up? Even when they're a loving relationship, there's still service. So it's not difficult to understand in that respect. So this is one point from material understanding. When the heart becomes attached to somebody, then it steals the heart, doesn't it? It steals the heart. We're no longer in control of our sentiments. And sometimes when there's separation, there's a great upset in the person's life, even to the point where sometimes they may even take their life. So we have to be very careful about people's hearts. Very, very important. We'll come back to that later. So this verse, what we quoted here, it quotes a verse on this last one, in verse 71, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, about the Radharani. She's feeling, she's... First of all, we'll go through the pastime, shall we, to get to this point. And what happened is that the Supreme Lord, he was wanting to fulfill the desires of the gopis. They'd asked to meet him in seclusion at one point. So he fulfilled that desire by one day he blew his flute. Which one was it? The Venu, was it? Or was it the... I can't remember which flute it was. Krishna has different flutes for different pastimes. And he blew his... Murali, I think it was. And the sound of this flute is so enchanting that the gopis just forgot everything. When they were playing with their babies, they were serving their husbands, but they just dropped everything and they ran to Krishna. And so Krishna's fulfilling that desire. When they reached Krishna, Krishna also started to perform another pastime. It's not possible to tie Krishna down. The gopis thought, now we have Krishna. But then Krishna sort of said, can I help you? Why have you come? So the gopis were completely dumbfounded. What do you mean, why have we come? We've just dropped everything to come here. We can't go back to our husbands anymore. We're outcast in the Vedic society. Somebody who's been outcast from who's been outside their home, a woman, for more than one night, they can't go back. This is what happened to Lord Ramachandra. Lord Ramachandra, he used to go in disguise into his kingdom to see what the citizens were speaking about, see if he was ruling properly. They even do that now, don't they? They send spies out, see if anybody's plotting against them, probably. not to find out whether they're doing the service properly, I don't think. Far from it. But anyway, and he heard two Sudranis arguing, man and wife, and the man said, I'm not like Lord Ramachandra. You've been out all night. I won't take you back. And Lord Ramachandra really understood, whoa. And he made arrangements that, okay, Sita has to go. And so this is the situation of the gopis. They were in that situation where they couldn't go back, and Krishna actually was teasing them. And he was bringing out of them a more loving affection. And they started to argue with Krishna. And actually they defeated Krishna with philosophy. And so Krishna had to accept them. And that's when they performed the Ras dance. And of course, in the Ras dance, Krishna presented himself equally between each gopi. But they couldn't see that. And so Krishna knows the heart of the devotee. It seems like Krishna's been a little bit rough with the devotees. But the devotees don't mind, do they? Do they? In the Sikh Shastikam it says that if one can only handle me roughly by his embrace, I'll make me broken out of by not being present before me. So Krishna actually did that. he saw that, wait a minute, there's a little bit of pride here. They're thinking that Krishna's only dancing with me. And one thing Krishna doesn't like in his devotee is pride. And so immediately he left. But what is that pride? Is there pride in the spiritual world? What do you think? Actually, it's described, I think I've explained this before, is that, as I said, Krishna knows the heart of his devotee, and the heart of his devotee is that he always wants to please Krishna. What's that verse in the Bhagavatam? The verse in the Bhagavatam says, the devotee is in the heart, Ridayo sadavo mayam, Ridayam sadham tvaham, mananyate janati nate bhyamma mano happy. I'm in the heart of the devotee, and the devotee is always in my heart. I don't know anything but the devotee, and the devotee doesn't know anything but me. And so Krishna's in the heart of the devotee, he's in the heart of everybody, and he's understanding their desires. They're so in love with Krishna that they feel insufficient, that's the word. I can't serve him enough. This is the nature of devotional service. It has the opposite effect of pride. We become more and more insufficient, not proud, humble. And so he was thinking now how to give them that opportunity to increase their devotion. And so Krishna's pastime potency is in tune with Krishna also, his internal potency. So he arranged within the minds of these gopis that they were thinking like this. It wasn't a natural thing for them. Arranged a little bit of pride so Krishna could use that to relieve himself of their association. And of course the gopis became beside themselves with anxiety when Krishna left. And they started searching the forest. And eventually they came to the banks of the river and they started to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And they were lamenting about how their Supreme Lord had left them. How is that possible? Their Supreme Lord's left them. They're on the platform of conjugal love. And then, of course, they saw that Radharani, this is prior to this point, actually, Radharani was still with him. So then they were feeling that, at first they felt some little bit of afflicted. Why has he just chosen this one person? But then he said, Prabhupada explains that the nature of a devotee is that there may be a little bit of so-called envy there, but when he sees that, after a little time, when he sees that a devotee is advancing, if he's a real devotee, he becomes very satisfied, very happy. So then the gopis became happy that this fortunate girl had got Krishna's soul attention. So then Krishna then saw some pride in Radharani's heart by the internal potency, pastime potency of the Lord. And this is the point we're at now in this Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th chapter, 10th canto. And I wanted to read that actually, what the conversation was like. There we are. Would you like to hear the conversation? Yeah. So, Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes the following moving exchange. Radha says, "My Lord, I am being burned in the great fire of separation from you, and my life air is about to leave my body. Even in the greatest endeavor, I cannot maintain my life, but you are the Lord of my life, and you can quickly save me simply by glancing upon me. Please do it immediately. I beg you to save my life, not for my sake, but rather for yours. After giving up the other gopis, you've brought me so far as to a secluded place in the forest, just to enjoy special pastimes with me. If I die, you will not be able to find conjugal happiness anywhere else. You will remember me and thus lament in your sorrow." So this is one argument. Krishna replies, "So let me become unhappy. What does that matter to you? But you are most dear to me. I feel your unhappiness millions of times more than you. Even if I've already died, I still will not be able to tolerate the pain that even at one spot of the nails of your lotus feet may experience. Indeed, to prevent such pain, I am ready to throw my life away millions and millions of times. So kindly show yourself and drive away that unhappiness." Krishna: "But if your life air is on the verge of leaving your body, what can I do to stop it? Simply by the touch of your arms, which are a medicinal herb with the power to revive the dead, my body will return to its healthy normal condition, and my life air will automatically come back and remain in my body. But you know the forest path yourself without my help. So why did you order me, the king's son, and a very young and gentle boy, who is to be respected? Why did you command, take me wherever you wish? Why do you anger me like this? Radha cries, please show me your... please show yourself to your wretched maidservant. Be merciful to me. Be merciful. When I ordered you, I was overcome by sleepiness. I was so tired from playing with you. Therefore, please excuse what your poor servant said. Please don't be angry. I was only because you treated me like such a close friend that I thought I'm unworthy that I spoke like this to you. All right, my love. I am pleased with you, so please come to me. But I've been blinded by lamentation. I can't see where you are. Please tell me where you are. So we see that Krishna is put in a situation where she's become fearful. Some awe and reverence has seemed to creep in. So I was going to speak a little bit more about that. So we can understand how Krishna covers. That other proof that Krishna is actually covering the devotee, that even one in which has a relationship of intimacy and not all reverence, then Krishna sometimes shows his opulence. He sometimes shows that. So just like Mother Yashoda, she was... Balaram was playing with Krishna and the cowherd boys, and they came to Mother Yashoda and said, Krishna's been eating dirt. You should tell him not to do that, chastise him. So then she shouted, Krishna, have you been eating dirt? And he said, they're just ganging up against me. I've not been eating dirt. Look, you can look in my mouth. So Mother Yashoda said, open your mouth, let me have a look. Prove it. And she looked in his mouth, and we all know she saw the whole universe in his mouth. And at that time, it says that the Supreme Lord took Yogamaya potency, was uncovered from Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, was uncovered from Mother Yashoda, and she was offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and she was lamenting that, I'm thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband, that you are my son, and like this. She was completely, she'd completely lost all her intimate relationship with the Lord. And then all of a sudden, Krishna covered himself again. Krishna covered her again, and she was back in under Yogamaya potency. And she was seeing that, wait, what happened there? And she started feeding Krishna again. So why does this happen? One thing is that familiarity breeds contempt. Is there familiarity in the spiritual world? This is my understanding anyway. But even in the spiritual world, in the material world, we see that sometimes we have to go through that difficulty of separation, and then we are actually more attached. It's called the embankment of separation. So that's going on in the material world when somebody's had to go to war to fight or is separated from his loved one. They carry a photograph and they're thinking more intently about the person that they love, even more than when they're actually in that close proximity. And so Krishna's constantly creating these situations where there's sometimes we're experiencing the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not exactly in awe and reverence. It's only for a fleeting time. And then one comes back to the platform of seeing Krishna as one's friend, relative, or like that, or lover. also the example of Vasudeva and Devaki. The difference between Madhurya and Aishvarya is that Vasudeva and Devaki have some awe and reverence. I remember reading one article by Gaur Govinda Maharaj. I tried to find it, but I couldn't. It's about the embankment of separation. It's talking about how this awe and reverence makes one's devotional service stunted. In other words, it's stopping us from really growing in devotional service. Too much fear means that love can't grow. But a little bit of fear is healthy for love, isn't it? So Krishna seems to be doing that. A little bit of fear there just to keep people on their toes, not get too relaxed. It says that about a woman, isn't it? A woman's supposed to, when once they get married, there's one song actually, I forget how it goes, but we don't have to recite it here, about how, you know, that don't think because you're married you don't have to, you know, look after your husband sort of thing, that you know, you still have to, you know, do the eyes up and put the makeup on and be a nice sight from when he comes home from work. Not that you can just actually drop all that after 6 months. But and this is the Vedic custom also. The Vedic custom is the same, is that a wife should always be very, very amenable to the husband, very, very happy and giving joy to the husband. You know, he's been at work for a hard day, he comes back, he doesn't want to, you know, hear about, you know, the washing machine's exploded and, sometimes that's the case. No, he wants to hear, he wants a bit of relief. And so that's a wife's austerity. A husband's austerity is to go out there and earn, to keep everybody together. And the wife's austerity is to assist him. And so that little bit of awe and reverence is helpful for keeping, you know, that little bit of fear is necessary. So yeah, Vasudeva and Devaki, they had Krishna. Krishna appeared in the prison house with four hands. And these four hands, why did he appear with four hands? Because he wanted to show, because they didn't have the same faith as Mother Yashoda and Nanda, to show there is a supreme personality of Godhead, Vishnu. I mean, a little bit of doubt if one appears with two hands, you're not so sure, but not many people appear with four hands, so they could understand this as Vishnu. But then, this is in reverse, then she started thinking, when, even though this is Vishnu, the most powerful living entity in all creation, the source of all creation, she was thinking, now you better change into two hands, otherwise Kamsa will come and kill you. You know, it's like, what's going on? But anyway, that's the way she was thinking. And so so then Lord Krishna turns into his Somyavapu form, his very beautiful form. And then, of course, we know what happened next, is that Vasudev took the child to Mathura, to Vrindavan, and exchanged, or so-called exchange, with the baby which was born to Mother Yashoda. But their relationship was completely different. Even though Mother Yashoda was sometimes told that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sometimes Nanda Maharaj was told this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he says, you can call him what you want, but he's my son. Still, that was prominent. So this is the difference between awe and reverence and Madhurya. Madhurya means there may be sometimes a glimpse of awe and reverence, but this is just like to add some flavour to the relationship, increase the flavour. But the awe and reverence in Vaikuntha is always there. So, so I was thinking that I'll read it just to prove this point, actually. It says, this is when Krishna, I'll just read the whole thing. So in the eternal pleasure pastimes of the Lord, Yogamaya sometimes covers the devotee's knowledge of that Krishna is God. This is another example of how knowledge and bhakti are not always interdependent. Sometimes the eternal associate of Krishna remember that he is the Supreme Lord. Sometimes they remember he is the Supreme Lord. And sometimes they forget, depending on the requirements of their particular devotional mood or rasa. At Krishna's name-giving ceremony, the sage Garga said, this child will grow in power, beauty, opulence, everything, on the level of Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, Mother Yashoda treated Krishna as her dependent child. Once Yashoda ordered Krishna, open your mouth so that she could see within, if he'd eaten dirt. Krishna obeyed, and when Mother Yashoda looked into her child's mouth, she saw the universal form, including all space, time, and planets. Realizing that Krishna was the Supreme Person, she prayed, let me offer my respectful obeisance to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under whose illusory energy I am thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband and Krishna is my son, that all the properties of Nanda Maharaj belong to me, and that all the coward men and women are my subjects. But then Krishna expanded his internal potency to cover Mother Yashoda's sense of awe and reverence. with maternal affection. She immediately forgot that Krishna was God and again accepted him as her child. In cases like these, in the eternal pastimes of the Lord, knowledge of Krishna's divinity comes and goes, but always in the service of bhakti. It never comes under just awe and reverence. It's always to actually increase his pleasure potency. I mean, the whole purpose of Krishna's pastimes is it's ever increasing bliss, isn't it? So we're also given what they call a foothold into those pastimes by this process of devotional service, which is being passed down by our acharyas, and most recently by Srila Prabhupada. I was thinking, so, you know, Prabhupada is externally no longer here to give hands-on guidance. And so it says that what the leaders do, whatever activities are performed by a great man, common men follow in his footsteps. So actually all devotees are leaders. We may not appear to be leaders or seem to be leaders, but in real leadership, it means leading the general mass of people on the path of spiritual progression. And so Prabhupada expected all devotees in this movement to take that responsibility of preaching and actually becoming guru eventually. He said, it's not a difficult thing, we just have to follow and pass on what we know. If we're a good follower, then we can actually teach. And so we're all acting in that capacity when we do some preaching. It's incumbent upon us to understand that it's a great responsibility, and our dealings should be very, very pucker, just like Prabhupada's dealings were with his disciples. What attracted people to Srila Prabhupada? Was it his knowledge? Was it his charisma? Maybe his charisma to some degree, maybe because he was an Indian, because he was a guru, because he had saffron cloth. No, it was because he attracted their hearts. I mean, the Prabhupada disciples can tell me more than anything else. I mean, I'm just reading what I read in Prabhupada Lilamrita and other books. But even when we're reading those books, we can feel for Prabhupada that, wow, he was such an attractive person. But to actually be in Prabhupada's presence, he attracted devotees from very low-grade activities to become pure Vaishnavas. It's his etiquette, Vaishnava etiquette, knowing how to deal with devotees, setting the proper example. So just like Krishna is dealing with his devotees very nicely, he's very attentive to his devotees, he's very careful not to spoil a devotee's ongoing progression of devotional service. Just like a young child, he'll not give him something harmful. He's always very attentive. And so the pure devotee of the Lord is also imbibing that mood. And that's what is attractive to that's what attracts people to the movement. That's what keeps people in the movement. And more than that, that's what keeps devotees in this. Prabhupada said that your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate. This movement is built on love and trust. And so that love and trust is dependent on each one of us to be able to deal properly in a non-duplicitous way with one another and be straightforward. Because this straightforwardness is the key to good relationships. It doesn't matter how many rough edges we've got, does it? You know, it says that in the Madhurya Kadambini, it's talking about when it comes to the stage of, I think it's either Asakti or Nishta. It said, how do we know who's advanced? Maybe it's the good qualities of that person is actually showing. He's starting to manifest all the good qualities of a devotee, all the good qualities of the demigods. Yes, this is in Shastra, this must be true. But actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he said, that may be there in somebody who's not a devotee to some degree. It may be external only. He says, how we can tell who's a devotee is that even though there may be rough edges, he doesn't say rough edges, he uses another word, but even though there may be so many anomalies there in his behaviour, if he's fixed in devotional service, he'd be considered actually relatively advanced in devotional service. And so, even though, but still, That devotee's dealings are straightforward. There's none of this like going round here, keeping this one in the dark and like that, and then pulling the rug out from another one. You know, it's like, oh God. You know what I mean? So it happens, doesn't it? So I'm really seriously, if we have the rough edges, the point I'm making, even though, you know, we may not have the proper etiquette, if we're a straightforward devotee, people trust us. And that trust will make sure that, even in difficult times, I mean, one of the devotees I trust most is not even in this room. You know, in my heart of hearts, one of the devotees, if I were really in trouble, I'll not say who it was, I'd go to him, and nobody would actually dream that that devotee was actually somebody worth taking shelter of. They go, ah, forget it, you know, they'd be real. But just to emphasize this point, I heard that one devotee left his body in Mayapur a few months ago. They call him back to Chris. I don't know what his initiated name was. Can you remember? He was initiated by Mahavishnu Swami. And he very rarely came to the temple. And he'd got a bad body. He'd got so many problems with his body. He had a stick. You know, he could hardly turn. And he weren't so old. And if anybody said, you know, who are you going to bet to go back to Godhead out of all this lot? You know, he'd have probably been at the end of the queue because he never comes to the temple. But one thing that always struck me is that when I recall, I thought, he was a perfect gentleman. He was straightforward as anything. And every time he spoke to him, he were in a happy frame of mind, even though he got so many problems. So, you know, these are the things we're looking for in a devotee, that somebody who's... Anyway, we're going off the subject a little bit. We were talking about non-duplicious dealings, about being straightforward. Then trust grows within one another, even though they may be devotees not on the highest platform. If we can trust somebody, then we'll take shelter. Because another thing is, if that devotee is straightforward, then Krishna can work in the heart of that devotee, isn't it? First thing is, we have to come to grips with where we're at and be honest with ourselves. And then we can actually accept Krishna's mercy. If we're thinking we're somewhere else, how can we accept Krishna's mercy? How can we pass it on to anybody else? We have to become a via medium for Krishna's mercy. So that's the most important thing. Spiritual strength also helps us to get to that point where we're straightforward. If we haven't got spiritual strength, then we become crooked. We start to deviate, because we don't have trust in the process, we don't have trust in Krishna. So these are some points that just came up as, you know, from this particular verse, that Krishna's been very attentive to how he deals with devotees. So we should also think how attentive we are with devotees. And now, one of the most important things is that in the material world, everybody knows when they're going to be ripped off, don't they? They're getting ripped off every day. Actually, some things they don't know. They're very expert at keeping things some secret. But they're dealing with people who are in that rip-off mode every day. So they know what to. So with a devotee, they can see it straight away. So we should be like Krishna. Try and be like Prabhupada. They're our guiding light. And so yes, sometimes we can use devotees in the name of pushing on the movement, can't we? You know what I mean? It's been done a lot in the past. Sometimes we use devotees in a certain situation. Then sell by date's gone, all of a sudden they dip, not even a second thought. Another one bites. When there's mistrust, another one bites the dust, isn't it? So devotees can accept anything if they are treated in a straightforward way with affection and love. Superficiality will not last. Devotees are leaders, so a spiritual leader, we need to have good sadhana, especially hearing the philosophy. Although, how is it possible? If we're not hearing the philosophy every day and understanding, you know, Maya's for Maya's even in the workings of the mind, in the workings of the intelligence. And unless we're completely sharpening the intelligence, unless we're sharpening the intelligence every day by hearing Bhagavatam, and we're able to see where Maya's creeping into our own activities, we have to take time to do that. Sometimes we're too busy. Just like the person who was walking through the forest, and he had this person sawing wood. And then he got closer, and this person was profusely sweating like anything. A huge log, and he got this big bandsaw. And so he took notice. He was halfway through it. And he went through the rest of the forest to the other village and collected his wares, came back, and this... And this person was on the same log of wood, and he'd moved a little fraction. He was still halfway through it. And he says to him, "Why don't you sharpen the saw?" And he says, "I ain't time." Anyway. So that's us, isn't it? We sometimes get into that. We've got to be so passionate. What does passion end in? Passion ends in grief. So we have to be a little bit more thinking about the mode of goodness, doing the needful so that in the future we won't be in a grieful situation. Okay, so we can stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.